Welcome back to my favorite day of the week, Sync Music Mondays, and I gotta introduce my man, my co-host, my brother, Kyle Hunter, also known as K Sparks. What's good, man?
Yo, what's up, Jay? What's going on, man? Sync Music Mondays, your favorite day of the week, my favorite day of the week, and y'all favorite day of the week, because y'all here listening to us, man, financial literacy for musicians, man. We do this for y'all, man, so big shout out, man. How you feeling, Jay? What's up, man?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm just trying, you know, I'm ready to get to the money. That's it. I'm ready. But you know, if I'm ready, I gotta have that knowledge. So what is today's word of the day?
Yo, y'all know what it is, man. Sync Music Mondays, that knowledge, the word of the day. We always try to do mind, body, and soul, man, to get y'all right. So today's word of the day, all right? Y'all gonna see this up on the screen. It goes like this. Control your energy, because that same energy used for complaining can be used to find a solution. I'll say it again. Control your energy, because that same energy used for complaining can be used to find a solution. I know a lot of times in life, like, we go through different situations, and because it's circumstantial, you're caught up in that particular moment, you might feel as if things are so hard, it's a struggle. But, you know, there's a saying that I love. It says, you know, always move with strategy, never emotion. So even though it's hard, because we're humans, we're caught up in the moment, you can't let your emotions get the best of you. And ultimately, the thing is to use your mental fortitude to think about the situation logistically and try to come up with a solution. Because it's either you're going to spend your energy in a wasteful manner or a productive manner. And we're all about being forward thinking. We're all about being productive, all about not only attacking, you know, these issues and problems, but attaining our goals. And that is the word of the day.
I love that. Dropping them gems on them. That's what I'm talking about. Drop them gems. Drop.
What's that dude? The Salt Bae, whatever his name is, he just do the... Gotta sprinkle that.
Little razzle dazzle. But speaking of razzle dazzle, you know, sometimes when I'm producing, you know, I like to throw a little razzle dazzle. You know, it's something that I can't do myself. So normally I would hire somebody, work for hire, and they would come in and they would, you know, play a little trumpet on some of my songs. That's not a trumpet noise, but I'm just, you know. But anyway, speaking of that, we have a very, very special guest in the building. Like I said, this person right here is an excellent, extravagant trumpet player. But he's also a composer and producer, ladies and gentlemen, John Colbreath. How you doing, man?
Hello. I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Man, we appreciate you taking out the time, man. You could have been doing anything, and we appreciate you being here with us.
Absolutely, yeah. I wouldn't rather spend this time doing anything else. Happy to be here.
Yes.
Oh, and that's my dog. My dog agrees with me.
Yeah, he's happy to be here too. He's happy too.
Yes. Now tell the people, you know, just a little bit about, you know, your background. Like, how exactly did you get into music? Like, let's go all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah. So beginning was my family had a piano in the house. So I can remember from, I mean, as long as I can remember, there was a piano. And it was just a thing I would walk over to and mess around on. And I think, so my mom pulled this really genius move that I think I kind of resented it at the time, but now looking back, I can attribute a lot of my musical development to this rule. So every week, I was allowed to have 7 hours of screen time. So TV, computer, whatever. And it was kind of genius because I would just blow it all on Saturday. I'd wake up at like 5 a.m, turn on the TV, start watching Bill Nye the Science Guy, and then just keep watching until all 7 hours were spent pretty much. And then I'd have no TV time. But my mom would give me the ability to earn more screen time by practicing. So she actually cut out these little cardboard tokens of 20-minute increments. And every time I practiced for 1 hour, I would get a 20-minute token. So if I wanted to go to the movies or something with my friends, or if I wanted to watch something on TV during the week, I'd have to practice basically for, yeah, like 3 hours, 6 hours for a 2-hour-long movie. So it became this sort of currency where I would just begrudgingly kind of sit there on the piano and practice my scales and just like wait for the timer to go off, and I'd collect my tokens and cash them in. So that was the beginning. So that was piano. And then when I hit middle school, I was actually homeschooled from 6th to 8th grade. And I would use practicing as a sort of legitimate procrastination over schoolwork. So if I didn't feel like studying history or doing my math problems or something, I was allowed to just go and practice. And I was playing trumpet at this point. So really, I was practicing a lot during middle school just because I had the time. I was at my house. And it was an activity to kind of escape from, other academic pursuits that I could have been doing. So by the time that I got to high school, I had been practicing daily for probably 1 to 3 hours just out of boredom. And then when I got to high school, it was just kind of, I grew up in Houston, Texas. So there's a very competitive sort of like all-state band situation where you go and you audition in a room of like 75 other trumpet players, and you're all playing the same excerpts, and you're trying to get to that all-state band. So that was kind of the big driver for me in high school, was I just wanted to be good enough to make one of these all-state bands. And I identified really heavily with that, like on a personal level, like that was kind of who I was. I was this trumpet player, and that was like my kind of social worth, was like how good I was on trumpet. So that got me to a pretty good place in terms of ability and technique on trumpet. It left some other things to be desired, which I later have been developing and building a more healthy relationship with music afterwards. So when I got to college, that was kind of the big wake-up moment, where it's like, oh, okay, just because I have good technique on trumpet doesn't mean I'm going to be successful. It doesn't make me a good person. It doesn't make me a cool person to be around. It doesn't make me a good leader. And so when I got to college, that was when the real life context of what music meant to me and its role in my life started actually developing. So I had a very narrow skill set going in, and basically the last 10 years I've been realizing all these other avenues of growth that I needed as a musician in order to be successful and have a balanced life. So that's kind of how I ended up here. That's the short story.
Nice. Now, you said you grew up and was raised in the Houston area. How do you feel like that had an influence on you musically?
Yeah. I wish I had gotten to play with more of the amazing players that were growing up in Houston at that time. At HSPBA was the performing arts high school, and a lot of like just amazing musicians came out of there. Eric Harland on drums, Robert Glasper, I think, went there. I think maybe Beyonce went there or something, or maybe she just grew up in Houston. But the Houston music scene, especially in high school, is just an amazing just breeding ground for creativity. And unfortunately or fortunately, a lot of them end up moving once they hit adulthood, because Houston's music scene is not necessarily a music city. You know, you don't think of it as a place where great records are necessarily made and like where there's a big infrastructure, so everybody moves out. But what it did do was, just in terms of volume, like that competitive situation where you would have to be, I mean, so in the Texas All-State Jazz Band, there's 5 trumpet players out of the whole state that they pick to be in that band. And so that was kind of, you're up against every other high school trumpet player in Texas if you want to make it in that band. And so that just kind of, it was kind of cutthroat, like how, like when you went to those auditions, there were vibes, like you were kind of people like whispering about people auditioning, like while they're auditioning. And like, you know, there's a whole like, hey, man, what's your trumpet range? What's your highest note, bro? Like, it's kind of the equivalent of like, what's your max, you know?
Yeah. It's all healthy competition. That's it.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the most healthy, I have to say, in retrospect. But it was a driver. Like it was like you had to really put in the time and the effort if you wanted to succeed in that arena. So, you know, and that's a topic that I talk about a lot with musicians and I think it's an important topic, is that music education from high school and college, if you're not careful, it can actually be really toxic. Because you can develop a guilt-based relationship with your craft. Like if you put the horn down, somebody else isn't, and they're gonna get the seat, not you. And so, and I see this a lot with like classical music, where classical musicians are just practicing 8, 10, 12 hours a day just to try to be good enough to get into an orchestra. And like, that's the whole goal. And I've had friends who got to that level and took a look at themselves and realized that wasn't the life that they wanted, but they had just shut out all of the, like, you know, kind of inner voice kind of thing. And just, it's such a hard goal to attain that they just kind of shut everything off in pursuit of it. And at the end of it, they realized there wasn't a balance in their life. So, you know, you ask about like, you said like, yeah, it's all healthy competition. Well, if you're not careful, if you don't set yourself up for a balance and in a relationship with that music, it can become unhealthy. So that, and I've written a blog about that. That's something, especially with like instrumentalists and people who are going through the academic music system. If you're not careful with your motives and like that balance of why you're doing it, it can creep up.
Nice. Now, what would you say was like your first big opportunity when it came to production music?
Production music. As far as like, what do you mean by production music?
I'm more so just like producing and composing.
Well, sure. So in terms of composing, my first outlet for that was a band that I got to start in college, which I'm still with today. It's called Naughty Professor. We're a 6-piece instrumental ensemble, and we write all of our own music. And that started within like 3 weeks of school. It was like a bunch of jazz majors. We all met in the practice rooms, and just decided to jam. And then after a couple jam sessions, it was like, okay, we could really do something with this and with this crew. So I remember we booked one show, and for the next couple weeks we rehearsed every day, sat and like did writing sessions every day, so we'd have enough material to fill an hour and a half long show. And that was really the birth of this group, which has been going for 12 years at this point. So that was probably the first opportunity I had to like really spread my wings in terms of like choosing a sound and like developing a compositional voice. It was probably that ensemble.
Okay, now you just said developing your voice. Who would you say are some of your top five musical influences?
Boy, top five. I would say as a trumpet player, my biggest influence, and this is a musician who I think a lot of trumpet players and just instrumentalists in general respect because of how he kind of unlocked a new role for specifically horn players, is Roy Hargrove. Roy Hargrove has his own group called the RH Factor, which really kind of, it was a very new sound when it came out, and it's something that I think a lot of people really vibe with. And he kind of took that sound, and when he was tapped to go play on D'Angelo's record Voodoo, I don't know if you know that track, Spanish Joint. But that trumpet roll on there where he's just like, he's just vibing, and he's almost like a guitar player in the way that he plays those lines where, you know, and he's like stacking on top of himself. No one had treated the trumpet roll like that ever before. And so I think that style has shown me a new way to be, a new role that a horn player can have on a track, and in a way, in a genre that horns typically were like sections, that like you'd arrange out a section and like someone would write out all the parts, and it was probably not just one instrument, but the way that he approached it was so like improvisational, and it was almost like solo licks where he'd play a little lick, but then he'd go back and record another lick that was kind of the same rhythm, but it was still sort of improvised and sort of in the flow of it. So like he didn't just sit down and like write out all the parts. He played all those parts and like in the studio kind of let it flow out organically. So if you analyze the parts, it's not something you would necessarily think to arrange in terms of like voice leading and like chords and stuff, but it's so natural in the execution of it. So Roy Hargrove, I think, would probably be number one for me in terms of musical influence. I don't know if you want me to go through all the next four, but I mean, and I have influences from in different capacities, you know? I mean, if I'm talking about just trumpet, it's probably Miles Davis, Clark Terry, Marquise Hill, Terrence Blanchard, Wynton Marsalis, in terms of trumpet influence. But then in terms of production, that's a whole other list. I really dig... you guys know... I'm trying to remember their name. It's Sam and Sam. The guys that play with Knower and with Lewis Cole, the bass player and the sax player, this is a record I've been really vibing on. I think it's Music for Bass Guitar and Saxophone, or I might have flipped that around. Just a really beautiful production approach that I've never heard before, and it's all instrumental. I really dig the Anomaly stuff. That keys player, like French keys player who just like completely changed. He added a whole new approach to kind of, it's like EDM beats kind of thing, but like with really prolific, like, just like piano playing throughout.
That's a fire list, John. That's a fire list, man. But you know, I gotta interject because, you know, for the people that might not necessarily be aware, man, John played the trumpet on the Temptations record that we did that got released on Universal Records. So John is a beast. I mean, he's just super talented, man. Like, you know, I really appreciate this guy right here, man. And he's a boss too. He's the CEO of Musos. You know, he has business partners and things like that. So I mean, you know, especially with this podcast, John, like a lot of musicians, like they're looking for outlets and companies that they can align with. So, you know, we get like a lot of questions, and, you know, we pretty much told our base that we were bringing you on. And the number one question was, how can they submit music to Muso? So, you know, I guess real quick, like, can you just kind of break that down? If artists are interested in submitting to Musos, how can they do that? And if you guys are even at all accepting submissions at this time?
Absolutely, yeah. So just hit up our website, musos.us. That's how you spell Musos right there. And there's a submission page. So you can just send us a link and a little message, and that'll go to our inbox, and we try to process all the requests. For the music that we think we can work with, we reach out. So that's the easiest way right there, just through our website.
Perfect, man. Perfect, John, man. And this, I mean, this is fire, man. I mean, you dropped so many gems during this process, man. I mean, for the listeners out there that want to connect with you, like, let's say that they want to build with you, you know, they want to find you on social media because they know how to get to Musos, but how can they connect with the man, the myth, the legend, John Colbert? Like, how can they connect with you on social media, man?
Yeah, John_Colbreath on Instagram. I'm on Instagram a lot. You can just hit me up right there. I'm on TikTok too, John Colbreath, no underscores. So that's the easiest way to link up with me on there and check out my latest trumpet antics. It's mostly trumpet.
Dope, man. What it, John, this was fire, man. Fire, bro. You know, I appreciate you, man. And more to come, man. I mean, we got a lot more tracks to do together anyway, man. But appreciate you coming on the show, brother. We really do, man.
Absolutely. And, you know, I should have dropped your name in that list because, honestly, you and Robert Ronci, Essential Knowledge, mm-hmm. that was my first opportunity to really put trumpet down over kind of the hip-hop beat scenario where that was really, really where I got to spread my wings and do that Roy Hargrove treatment over hip-hop stuff. And I have so much fun with that. That Temptations thing was absolutely amazing to be a part of. And all the processes that I've gotten to work with you on and all the beats that Robert has brought me in on, I really, really enjoy having that trumpet roll over that kind of stuff. So, you know, put K-Sparks on that list.
Look, man, we appreciate you, brother. We appreciate you, man. And you know, I'm pretty sure the listeners, man, that are listening to this, man, they appreciate it as well. And I'm pretty sure they're going to flood y'all inbox over at Musos as well, man. So, you know, big shout out to you, man. We appreciate you, man. And much respect, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right back at you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Make sure y'all cop his, you know, trumpet sample packs too on his website. Might as well get some. Yes, and make sure if you're not subscribed, like, comment, all that. And until next week, we out.